Is this a mega fire? Let's find out a little bit about it, and let's talk to a man who knows a lot about big fires. His name is Jerry Williams. He's the retired National Director for Fires for the U.S. Forestry Service, and he joins us on the line from the United States. Jerry Williams, good day to you.
Good day to you, Chris.
Jerry, you've seen some of the footage from the Australian fires. I know it's made front page news in some of the papers in the United States, which gives an indication as to how big a disaster this is. Are we appropriate to call this a mega fire?
Oh, no question. You know, before I get into this, though, if I might, I want to express our sympathies to the people that have lost their loved ones and their homes in this tragedy. Just the other day, I was talking with the former chief of the U.S. Forest Service, and he also was expressing his disbelief and sympathy. We have a lot of friends, and you may know my sister has lived in Australia since the early 70s. So we're quite close to this and have a lot of empathy for what's happened there.
Every 20 or 30 years, it seems, in Australia, we have a major bushfire event. This one seems to have surpassed everything. Are we finding that fires are getting bigger? These major fires, these mega fires, are getting bigger?
They're certainly getting more severe. I think we're seeing a worldwide pattern this way. When we stop and look just in the last few years at what's occurred in Spain and Portugal, just a couple of years ago in Greece outside of Athens, Australia, I was down there following the Canberra fires. You've had multiple what I would term mega fires, and of course this country has suffered multiple mega fires. It seems to me that every one eclipses the one before it in terms of severity and loss.
So the question then is, why are the fires getting bigger?
I think that we all recognize the effects of global warming and drought. Clearly, that's implicated in the megafire problem. In the analysis that we've been doing of megafires in this country, though, we're beginning to see that forest condition has a lot to do with the megafire phenomenon. As I mentioned, climatologists are telling us that drought cycles are deepening and fire seasons are becoming longer. But the net effect is that more fuel is becoming available as more vegetation and biomass dries out. Fire scientists are telling us that often the highest fuel hazards are in fire-adapted or fire-dependent forests where fire has been excluded for too long. And ecologists are telling us that these fire-dependent forests, as a result, are less resilient and more prone to severe burning outside of their adaptive limits than what was found under more natural burning cycles. I think all of this is translating into more dangerous and more destructive megafires around the world.
Does that mean that we need to, and not just in Australia, but around the world, we need to look at what we're doing to manage our forests and perhaps take the unpalatable option of burning off more often, more frequently?
I believe so. I think that even though we're beginning to see these cause and effect relationships between climate and condition of forest, regrettably, we're not always acting on these cause and effect relationships. I would share with you that in the analysis that we've done following the megafire work, in those forests where regular, ongoing, prescribed burning is being carried out at large landscape scales, and where we've aligned our natural resource objectives with the ecological dynamics of the land, we have the lowest firefighting costs, the least property loss, and the greatest natural resource benefit over time. Contrasting that, in those places where we've tended to emphasize firefighting alone and been averse to prescribed burning for whatever reason, and there are a lot of reasons, and where we've overlooked the ecologies of an area, it's in those places where, again, over time, we're spending the most money, were suffering the greatest losses, and ironically, we find ourselves imperiling the very natural resources we're hoping to save.
Are we now looking at a situation that is going to take a long time to rectify, bearing in mind that we're talking about policies that have been in place in many places now for 15, 20, 30 years to say, no, we're not going to burn off in these forests, we're going to leave them pristine vegetation areas. We've now got huge swathes of bushland that haven't had any regular burning off, and we have a compounded problem that if we try to burn it off, the fuel loads there are incredible.
It's a difficult and most contentious problem. I don't think that we're going to see significant progress overnight, and we're certainly not going to enter into any mitigation strategy without some level of risk. Having said that, I think it's fair to say that living with the problem or doing nothing or feeling overwhelmed by the obstacles that we face is not a good option, not when we look at the effects of the fires that we suffered outside of San Diego in 2003 and the fires that occurred in Athens, and I know the fires that you folks have suffered just recently in Victoria. I do think, having said that, though, that you are right in saying that the overaccumulations have become immense. I am not convinced, though, that that means we can't act. We have places in this country where we're beginning to see people marry up biomass removal with electric cogeneration plants, where it's become more economically feasible to deal with the fuels problem, and it's providing some side benefits. We need to expand those opportunities and I believe, begin looking more outside the box.
Jerry Williams is my guest this morning. He is the retired National Director for Fires for the U.S. Forestry Service. Jerry, some people are suggesting here that we now need to reinvigorate some forest clearing practices and establish large fire breaks. And when they're talking large fire breaks, they're talking about a kilometre wide or more than a kilometre wide. Is that something that would be effective and be compatible with what other things we try and do with our forests?
I think it would be, I would encourage folks to look at examples of where that's occurred around the world. Fuel breaks in some cases under some fire conditions have proven effective. In other examples, though, when you start thinking about the fire severity and the fire intensities and the spotting distances involved in these mega fires, they go over fuel breaks very rapidly. It's not a good strategy under extraordinarily severe burning conditions. I might add that megafires in this country, at least, represent a very small fraction of total fires. It's less than probably 1/100th of 1% of all the fires that we deal with. But they have a hugely disproportionate impact in terms of acres burned and losses. It's under these conditions that we have to think about a more comprehensive protection strategy. Fire department capabilities and capacity work well up to a point, but if there's anything we've learned with the megafire phenomenon, there are clear limits to our effectiveness using traditional strategies. That's why I encourage our people to be looking at not only firefighting capabilities and firefighting capacity, but land management practices, how we integrate our resource objectives into the dynamics of these fire-dependent ecosystems, what options we might have in utilizing fuel hazard material, whether it's for cogen or other, but we've simply got to start looking at doing things differently if we hope to deal with these disasters.
And megafires, when they get to that size, they do behave differently from other fires, don't they?
Well, they certainly do. I mean, just looking at some of the photos from the Australia situation. You've recently suffered. These are big columns. They're spotting far ahead of themselves. It doesn't take much where all of a sudden fire behavior is exceeding all efforts to control, including indirect attack and the use of fuel breaks. For my money, all the examples I've seen across the United States and even in some places of the world where mega fires stop is where we get a break in weather or we get a break in fuel. And oftentimes, that's an area where we've been doing some prescribed burning at a large enough scale where fire simply runs out of fuel.
Terry, should we be looking at making fire bunkers mandatory in fire-prone areas?
I can't really speak to that. I think that any time we look at solutions, we've got to really look at the trade-offs involved and compare them to other alternatives. You know, in this country, one of the arguments would hold that we need to simply protect those areas where people live and let the rest of the fire burn as it will in the backcountry, the wildlands, or the bush. The problem with that is that you may be giving up other critical resource values, watersheds, critical endangered species habitat, just the enjoyment of a forest. For my money, it makes a lot more sense to treat the causes and see what we can do to affect positive change across a larger landscape.